This week's sermon, I have to say I've been feeling discombobulated all week with this whole Epiphany being in the wrong year kind of thing. But this week's sermon was also a bit of a head scratcher. Firstly, I didn't have the benefit of our online sermon circle on Wednesday to throw far more material than I could ever use at me as they normally do. Secondly, I realized I've preached quite often on Epiphany. And to be honest, earlier in the week, I was kind of feeling I was out of material. Though I have not preached on this feast since 2019, I did go back and look at the sermon from 2019 and the ones before, and I wondered just how different I could make this sermon, if I could make it any different at all, because it was tempting, and I'm sometimes encouraged to try to use an old sermon and see if anyone noticed. Though my experience of this community is that you do tend to listen, and you actually feed back things that I've said before, which is deeply disturbing, particularly when it comes weeks, months, or even years after I said it. As my beloved partner says, there is no such thing as a throwaway comment. So I will avoid going down the recycling's good, but not necessarily for sermons route. And anything that I say that sounds repetitive is probably because I said it before without realizing it. But there is one thing worth repeating, in case any of us have forgotten, and that is just how carefully constructed this story that we heard of the Magi, the wise men, is. And how much more, and indeed much less, there is in the story than we often assume. It's the same with the whole of the Christmas story. It's our telling of this story is mixed up with assumptions and interpretations and misinterpretations which have built up over many years, if not centuries. Like, for instance, Mary riding a donkey to Bethlehem. It's not in the story. No mention of any livestock. Like there being an innkeeper. That's not in the story, which is a bit disappointing because I love to tell the grumpy innkeeper story at every Christmas Eve when we have the multi-generational service. In fact, there's even good reason to question the use of the word in the nativity story. The word katiyelimati, which we translate as in, is a flexible noun in the Greek of the New Testament and is used to mean variously lodging, guest house, brothel, or guest room in a house. Some scholars have said that it would have been unthinkable for Joseph to go back to his family city and not stay with relatives, who, if they already had a full guest room, would have invited Mary and Joseph to share their home living space, which they would have shared with the animals and would have had a manger in. That also makes more sense if you listened carefully to our gospel reading that Lorraine read so nicely, of verse 11 in our today's reading, which says, on entering the house, the Magi worshipped. But I digress. So much of what we think about as our scripture story comes from what's been layered on over the years, which is kind of amusing because of the layers that already exist within our scripture stories. But more of that in a moment. What we have layered on over the years includes, for instance, the idea of the Magi, the wise men, being kings. That was added by some storytellers as an explanation for the generosity of the gifts given to the Christ child in this story, or perhaps an attempt at explaining how they could afford to leave their homelands for an extended period of time and travel to Bethlehem. But that's all speculation, as is the idea that there were three Magi. There is no mention of how many there are anywhere in our scriptures. The assumption is just made because of the three gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And indeed, we don't even know that any of it happened quite as recorded. It's only Matthew that has this story. And as I said, it has layer upon layer of symbolism, which points perhaps more clearly to a mythic rather than a literal telling of this tale. I did read one commentary recently where a conservative biblical scholar said that if the stories of Jesus' birth and the visit of the Magi were not literally true, then Matthew was being deceptive. I'm not sure that that quite has a grasp of what metaphor and myth really are. Or as our wonderful Peggy Wilmot used to say when she was teaching Sunday school, all of the Bible is true and some of it actually happened. My own interpretation, and here I have to say that every time I stand up and preach, all I can do is offer an interpretation. It's all any preacher, teacher, scholar, or wise person can ever do. And if anyone claims to be offering the only interpretation, please be assured that they are wrong, though they may offer a really good interpretation. My interpretation is that we don't need this story to be literally true, to be filled with truth. I'm inclined to a very symbolic reading of this passage and the stories that surround it. The gifts, as you'll probably know, and in fact, as we heard about in the last hymn that we just sang, are all seen to have a symbolic meaning. Frankincense, used in worship, to reflect Jesus' priestly nature. Gold, a symbol of the wealth of kings, or as some would say, the riches of the life of faith. And myrrh, to symbolize the suffering and the death that Jesus would undergo. Again, those meanings were given by later interpreters. There's probably even more to the offerings and the symbols of the offerings than those explanations, and we could spend an awful lot of time unpicking it, but I won't, I promise. And it comes back to the reminder for me to stop trying to fit everything together logically, to see again the symbolic and the poetic nature of this and our scripture story. Layer upon layer of vivid and vital imagery, truth and meaning. When we can let go of something of the need to be reasonable, and by which I mean to demand that everything conform to our own intellectual or rational structures, then we can encounter and be gripped by something of the mystery and the wonder of these stories and their symbols. There is one part of the symbolism of this whole story, the broad Christmas story, but particularly we celebrate today, that we should take very seriously indeed. And that is the repeated lifting up of the outsider and the welcoming of the stranger and the embrace of the outcast. From the young woman chosen as Theotokos, the God-bearer, to her cousin who was barren, to the manual worker that takes Mary as his partner, to the shepherds excluded from polite society and out in the fields invited to gather at the manger, and now to these astrologers, stargazers from beyond the pale. They are non-Jews, and they indulge in reading the stars for signs, which is in turn ridiculed and despised by Hebrew scripture writers, though it seems likely that lots of people indulged in it. And Herod the king, though not an Orthodox Jew, certainly gives it credence. Epiphany is usually described as the manifesting of Christ to the Gentiles, as symbolized by the Magi. Yet this story tells us the divine was at work in these wanderers, long before they turned up at the manger crib. The whole nativity story is about the way in which God works within, and through the outsider. The Spirit is present in places we do not expect her to be. This wonderful, mind-expanding, symbol-stuffed story challenges us to see the divine in those we would like to exclude, ignore, or keep out of our safe space. It challenges our conception of where God is to be found and where God chooses to work. As churches, we are in constant danger of turning inward, reduced, contracting by our anxieties over money or attendance or fears of the outside world and our sustainability, reduced often to anxiety over finance or wanting to swap out the incumbent for a new one, or to move the pews out in a way that is sometimes reminiscent of rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. As we end this year with this wonderful, challenging story. Let's move again to an expansive, generous vision of who we are. Creating community, committed to justice, love and grace, and filled with the Spirit. I hope we enter this new year with a renewed vision of who we are and who we are becoming. A sign and a symbol of the love and the grace of God. A place of welcome and healing. A community of the flawed, I've said it before, flawed, fallible, and deeply faithful. A place where God is sought, found, shared, and celebrated. May we be all that God is calling us to be, a community of outsiders filled with love. Thanks be to God.